Hello, District 38, and welcome back to a new episode of our podcast, The Megaphone. I'm Chris Hulse, and I am the immediate past district director and your podcast host. And I have two guests on the podcast today. You can call this episode a two-guester. That's probably not a word, but I have been known to make up a word or two. But you can do that when you are a DTM, a Distinguished Toastmaster. DTM, which stands for don't time me for some people, but for me, it means don't tell me my filler words. That's a little DTM humor there. But anyway, if you didn't already know this, District 38 will be having a virtual fall conference on November 15th, and you will start seeing, or there already is, information out on our district website, tmdistrict38.org, and on our district social media. And our first guest today is one of the people who is responsible for helping put together this virtual fall conference on November 15th. Chris Dennis is our new program quality director here in District 38. And I've actually known Chris for years because all people named Chris know each other really, really well. No, but seriously, we both came from Division E, and Chris is a member of the Kutztown Area Toastmasters, where she's held nearly every club officer position. She also has sponsored a youth leadership program. And before she became program quality director, she was an area director, a division director, a training coordinator, and the division director mentor. She's someone who I've looked up to in my Toastmaster journey because she is just that cool. Please welcome Chris Dennis to the podcast. How are you doing, Chris?
I am doing great, Chris, and I am so glad to be here for this opportunity. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be awesome today. So, we have just heard a lot about your Toastmasters career, but what sorts of things have you done outside of that? Let's start with what gets you up in the morning.
Well, I love getting my day started for whatever it is on my agenda. I do get up each weekday morning very early, so I can exercise. I've been doing that since I was 18. Yes, I do miss a day here or there, but that's how I start my Monday through Friday. Weekends are dedicated to getting items done around the house. That's how I get started in the morning.
Okay. And I know you have a family. Like, can you tell us a little bit about your
Yes,
family?
actually, my youngest daughter is at the University of Charleston in West Virginia, 7 hours away. My oldest daughter lives about 20 minutes from me and works very close to our house, so she comes in and pops in for a visit. And my husband is retired, and you never know what that man is going to create. He's created little baskets out of peach pits. He does stained glass, he does woodworking, he does a lot of different things. No electrical work or plumbing, but he does a lot of creative ideas, and that keeps him so busy every day, and he just loves it and enjoys it. And we get to benefit from it.
Well, that sounds really cool. So I know you and I have spoken about the youth leadership program you help coordinate, and you were really passionate about it. Can you tell me why that youth leadership program was so important to you?
That is a great question. Actually, it was about a call to service. A young woman's mother introduced her to the idea of the youth leadership program, and she got in touch with me. The young woman was so well spoken and driven that I knew this was important to her and her classmates in order to help prepare them for the future. So she and I jumped in, started organizing others to attend. And we did this in the summer of 2020. And so it was virtual because it was 2020 and we were still trying to figure out what does this mean? Do we meet? Do we not meet? And we did it virtually. It was delivered 100% online. And the students that came were absolutely fabulous. And it was just a great way to connect with the young people and to see, wow. Look what they have and look what they can do and look where we can take them. And setting that stage for them for the future, that's what actually drove me for to do that entire program with them. It was absolutely wonderful, very uplifting, just like a lot of things in Toastmasters. Everything seems to be uplifting and positive and a great place to kind of Come back and smile. That's what I always say about Toastmasters. Come back and smile.
Well, and I always love how everybody has a different answer to this question, and I'd love to find out. So, Chris, why did you originally get into Toastmasters?
I joined Toastmasters originally to connect with other local professionals and to get out of the house. I was a full-time telecommuter and for about 4 years, and the children were young, and I wanted something that could connect me out of the house and an outlet for me. So I originally joined from a networking perspective, and where I have gone has gone way beyond that, and I'm so happy I joined. And I am a part of Toastmasters, and it's been a great journey. All because I wanted to network and get out of the house. That's what got me started.
And now we're lucky enough to have you. You've had all these roles in district leadership. Now you're part of the district trio. So, but I have a few questions to try to get to know you, Chris Dennis, the person, a little better. So my first question there is, what would you say your leadership style is, Chris?
My leadership style is very collaborative and a partnership with others. I seek to use talents that others already have and then stretch them just a little bit, become a better version of themselves, and to push that envelope, always with the understanding, I'm here to help you. What do you need from me? They're the ones doing the work and the stretching. I just plant the idea for them. That's what I think is my leadership style.
Well, and one thing that I've noticed, and this kind of leads me to my next question, is one of your signature phrases, I think, basically is emblazoned all around your style. And that phrase is, let's figure it out. And I love when I hear you say that. So what exactly does that mean to you when you're telling a group of people, let's figure it out?
What it means is, I don't have the answer, but we will find the answer. And I know even with the first year as a division director, I truly did not have all the answers. And when the area directors asked me questions, if I did not know the answer, I would find the answer. I love to learn. So seeking out those answers is key to me. They're out there somewhere. And I would come back and share with the area directors. They truly appreciated that about me. Not the fact that only I would find the answers, however, that I would also follow up and provide them the answers or a tidbit of something that moved us a little further. Because as we know, Toastmasters provides general guidelines, but not a job description with all the bullets that you typically get from a work environment. And that is the luxury of Toastmasters, because you do have to figure it out along the way and use a variety of resources to get to where you need to be.
Absolutely. So, who motivates you?
Really, it's other people around me. I do remember an interview question one time, and they said, well, since you stopped going to school, college, because I did that at night, how are you learning? And I had made a very direct decision. If I was not going to continue with school, I was going to learn from the people around me. And learning meant whether it was coaches for the ice skating team, synchronized ice skating team that I belonged to, whether it was another leader, a coworker, a friend. That's where I learn. That's what motivates me. Those are the people who motivate me. And you can pick up one little item from anyone and learn that skill. And I remember I had a friend, she was buying a house, and she goes, Chris, can you go over this project plan with me? This woman had an entire project plan for all the things that she wanted to do in that house, all the materials that's what I learned from her. Very
Oh, wow.
driven, very motivated. You can take work skills, apply it to your personal life. You can take Toastmaster skills, apply it to work and your personal life. So who motivates me is everyone I'm surrounded by and what I can learn from each and every person.
That's great. I like that. So, this one might sound a little silly, but sometimes it tells you a lot about a person. What's your favorite go-to snack?
Chips. I love the salt. Yeah. I love the chips. I don't have them often in the house because they will just become lunch. Though I have chips and sometimes at the end of my coffee, it's a little chip, a little salt, with a little something sweet.
Oh, nice, nice. A great combination. Kind of, hit different parts of your tongue there. Yeah. Do you collect anything?
Well, I did collect antiques at one time. However, when we moved from this large old farmhouse to the current home, we realized that we had so much stuff and did not need it. Therefore, I still look, but I'm much more intentional than I was before as to the items that we purchased to bring home because we had a lot of stuff. I mean, I think I had 10 rocking chairs when we moved out of the farmhouse to come
Wow.
here. Yes, I sold them for $5 each.
Ah, wow.
When to get rid of them, had to go.
I was gonna say, and you probably paid more than
Oh my
$5 for
gosh,
those rocking chairs.
yes.
That's funny. So getting back to Toastmasters, what do you bring to the table as program quality director?
I bring a desire to help others move fearlessly forward in their Toastmasters journey. I think we realize that expanding our world beyond our clubs helps us to see all the possibilities that Toastmasters has to offer. And that's what I really want to encourage people to do is to get out there and grow. Do more than what you do at the club. Bring some of those items back to the club. Help others expand their Toastmasters world and journey. That's what I bring to the table, and I hope others will continue to do that as we fearlessly move forward in this District 38 year.
Well, thank you, Chris Dennis. I wish you the best and all the successes in this role. I know you'll do great and make your mark on the district, most of all on all of us Toastmasters here in District 38. Anything you want to leave us with before you get to our next guest?
I just want to say thank you for having me on, Chris, and I look forward to everyone signing up for the conferences, both the fall and the spring conference, and for each of you to uncover ways to move fearlessly forward.
That's an awesome close there. And yes, I very much am looking forward to the fall conference and the spring conference. Thanks again, Chris.
Thank you.
Our other guest today is Furzy Gotwako, and he is an executive speech coach, TEDx speaker, and TEDx coach with over 30 years of experience. Furzy helps leaders speak with confidence and impact. And he'll be our District 38 keynote speaker at our virtual fall conference on November 15th. Furzy coaches entrepreneurs on high-stakes business pitches and works with voiceover artists to refine their vocal delivery. Furzy is also a six-time Toastmasters District champion across three districts and multiple speech categories. And he was also named District 25 Toastmaster of the Year in 2020. And a very cool thing, he is a two-time finalist in the World Championship of Public Speaking in 2022 and in 2024, ranking among the top speakers worldwide. Hello, Furzy. How are you today?
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. So I've done a little bit of research about you, preparing for this interview. And so from what I've read about you, your background is in teaching theater and speech. Was that always your dream, or growing up, did you have some other things that you wanted to do first?
That's a great question. I always knew I was going to be a teacher. I didn't know what subject. But ever since about second grade, I knew I wanted to be a teacher. I didn't know when I would be a teacher, but I just knew that this is going to happen. It was in college when I fell into teaching theater arts. And that's when I started training to be an actual theater arts teacher. I did that for most of my career. And then I ended up going into speech for just a little bit of time. But theater was really my big passion.
Okay. So, how did you evolve into a successful speech coach?
Once I started being successful speaking in school situations, working with students, teaching the entire school through speaking, then I started wondering, okay, what else can I do? Because then I started doing faculty training, and then I started doing trainings across the entire district. And that got me curious. Then, of course, you discover Toastmasters. And that was a complete accident. I found Toastmasters by complete accident. And that's what sort of gave me the green light. It was when people in Toastmasters said, you could take this to the next level. And I thought, okay, I'll take that jump. It was with the support of Toastmasters.
Well, and I was actually surprised to learn that you've only been a Toastmaster for 7 years. And my thinking was that when you became a Toastmaster, you were already really well spoken when you came to this organization. So what areas were you looking to improve upon when you became a member?
I've wondered about that because I always thought I was a little different than others because everyone wants to join Toastmasters to get better at public speaking or to improve or to be more confident. To tell you the truth, Chris, I joined because of the community. I joined because there were people there who liked doing what I was doing already. I found like-minded people. And that's a really special thing. I've always thought we can learn how to speak anywhere, right? There's videos all over the internet. You can go to YouTube and learn how to speak. But Toastmasters gives you the one thing YouTube can't: community. It gives you people who can support you on that journey, and you don't have to be out there in the desert wasteland by yourself. And that's a beautiful thing.
I absolutely agree. I mean, that's what's kept me in Toastmasters. I mean, I have the confidence now, but I think for people that kind of get to that point where they're well spoken, like you said, that they're around other people who basically have similar interests, and it is a beautiful thing because it's something that, and also when you see people coming into it and you're like, oh, this thing that I have, I can teach them, I can help them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know what? Learning is, for some people, learning is fun. And for many others, learning, you're out of your comfort zone. We all know that. And especially with public speaking, you're up there alone. And you want to make sure that people will respond positively and support you when you're up there all alone, putting your words into the universe. If your only public speaking experience is at work, that's a little daunting. But to have a group of people who say, we're going to listen to you, that's huge, incredibly valuable. And that's the gift that Toastmasters gives to its members.
And I've found, and I actually want to see if you found this too, speaking around the world, that even if it's a group of people that don't even know you, the fact that you're a Toastmaster and being a Toastmaster, you've been through similar experience, it's almost like a built-in captive audience that is willing to listen to you and willing to help you in any way they can. Have you found that in your experiences?
It is. And here's where I'm going to stray from the typical party line on this, Chris. It is a wonderful thing. And there's a double-edged sword to this. We could get used to it as speakers. And I think sometimes we get comfortable, maybe too comfortable, because when we go out into the real world, can we put it that way? When we go out into the real world, they are not always as positive and supportive. It's not a captive audience. They don't have to listen to us, and they will get on their phones. They will get up in the middle of your speech. They will look around. They will do something else. And you've got to earn that attention. And I think sometimes in Toastmasters, it's so easy that we think, oh, this is life in general. And what you have to do is you have to remember the audience always has a choice. Just like if you did TV, they can always turn the channel. Your audience can always flip the switch and turn the channel. And as a speaker, know that your audience has many choices. Include and the most powerful one is right there in their pocket on their little phone. And you have to fight for that attention. And you have to be cognizant of that and make it interesting. Every word, everywhere. It can't just be, okay, I've said my hook. And now for the next 5 to 7 minutes, I can do whatever I want. No. You've got to keep your audience hooked in, pulled in, and moving forward.
Well, and that's, and then we're going to talk about speech contests a little later in our conversation. But that's one of the things I like about speech contests because it elevates that whole experience. It kind of takes all that and almost puts it on steroids. But to kind of build upon we were talking about you coaching, and I was reading that one of your philosophies includes a quote that it goes, "A mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a flame to be lit." Can you explain a little more what that means?
Absolutely. It stems from teaching. I think oftentimes we still see ourselves as keepers of the information. We're the gatekeepers, you know, teachers up on stage going, "None shall pass." And so we think that this is what a teacher is, and you pour information into people's heads. But that's no longer the case. The students no longer really need a teacher for content. They have everything they need right there in their pocket. Actually, it's probably already in their hand. Or they've got a laptop. So what then is our job as teacher or coach? Our job is to get them inspired. Our job is to fan that flame, to get them to think, okay, what else can I do? You know, when we do evaluations, Chris, when I coach evaluations, everybody does the we evaluate to elevate, right? And definitely we have to do that. We have to be able to evaluate to elevate. But one of the things to consider is not just getting better at their speeches, but how do you inspire them to keep applying everything that they're learning in Toastmasters to everything outside of Toastmasters? And can we, as individual evaluators, coach our target speaker to make that transition? Otherwise, they may not make that connection. They may not make that connection to their real jobs, their real lives. And this comes from my background again as a teacher, because everybody thinks, okay, what I learned in theater stays in theater. And I would have to get them to understand, make the connection. What you learn in theater is transferable. It's a transferable skill, the creative thinking, the analytical thinking, the working together. How do you use everything that we do here in this space outside? That's what we have to do as teachers in our Toastmasters meetings. How do we not just elevate, but stimulate? How do we stimulate our speakers? I think that's what fanning the flame is.
Want to build upon that, that's what I explain to people about evaluations because I don't know about in your experience, sometimes people are really good at the speaking part, but they get really nervous giving feedback. And I've told people, especially people who want to be leaders, giving feedback in a Toastmasters situation, it will help you give feedback to employees that you have. If you have to tell them, okay, here's what you're doing well, but here's what you need to improve upon, because I think for a lot of people, that's not natural. But if they can hearken back to when they've evaluated someone's speech, they go, oh, I learned that skill there, and that skill is transferable to something I got to do at my job. Wow.
Absolutely. And to also build on what they do well, right? We kind of forget that. We kind of say, okay, you did this well, you did that well. Now I'm going to tell you what you need to learn. I'm like, no. Learning about what you did well and how that transfers is just as important. Otherwise, they'll stop doing
Exactly. Yep.
it.
Exactly. So I watched some of your videos prior to our interview, and I have to say you were very humorous. Does that come naturally to you, or did you have to work at it when you're becoming a successful speaker?
I think it comes from confidence. I don't think I was, well, I'll tell you what, Chris. I don't think I'm personally very funny. I actually don't think I'm that funny. I think I will maximize an opportunity to engage with somebody or engage with a group. And that's why I think humor is based on engagement. I think humor is based on what we all find in common. I'm simply pointing out something that we might have in common. I'm pointing out some connection that you and I may have, or we all may have together. And if I can get everybody laughing, then that means we're all in the same frame of mind.
Okay.
That's what I think. I don't think it's necessarily trying to be funny per se, but rather, how could I put you at ease? How can I take the uncomfortableness out of the room? How can I get you to bring down your wall, your defenses? And if that, and I think that then translates into being funny.
Have you ever had clients say to you, "Hey, how do I be fun?" Like, is that the sort of advice you give them, the commonalities when they ask you, how do I get to be funny?" Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because they do ask, and a lot of people will ask me to do workshops on how to be funny, and it's very difficult in some ways to be funny. But what I say in my storytelling is to create the connections,
Okay.
and that will be through humor. And that's where you really have to know your audience. Because if you try to say something to be funny and you don't know your audience, then you're just going to put your foot in your mouth.
Absolutely. Yeah, and it's excruciating to watch when that happens. It's like, oh
Painful.
man.
Painful.
Yeah. And in a world where our attention span is only a few seconds, like that's when people start doom scrolling. It's like, oh, well, I'm not going to watch this uncomfortable situation.
What? Did you say something? I got distracted. I was doom
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, you
scrolling.
screamed, you scrolled right past it. So something else I noticed in your videos is that, and again, it might come from, you said, the confidence. You come across with a credibility that I thought was noticeable. I watched your videos on vocal tongue twisters, lighting, gestures, body positioning, and I thought, man, this guy seems like he's an expert in this space. I mean, have you always been able to command a room, or did that happen over time?
I think that happened over time, and I appreciate the compliment. I do. And I also appreciate how much research you do or you did for this interview. That's an incredible amount of research. I think it came over time. I think it came from theater background, theater training, and it came from years in the classroom. When I'm talking about these particular elements of speaking, it's because I've done it for so long that I can do it reflexively. And I think that's part of the confidence that I know what I'm saying because I've tested it and done it over and over and over for 30 years. You know, when they talk about 10,000 times, right? Have you done something 10,000 times? I've done that 10,000 times. You know, I've got kids 6 days a week, sometimes on the seventh day as well. And it's on all day long, and I've got 8 periods a day, and I'm repeating myself. And so you learn how to say it better and say it with confidence.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, and I know we talked about speech contests here and there, but I just want to say congratulations on getting to the finals of the World Championship of Public Speaking. Twice you've been on the world stage. Now, did you know you were going to get that far with those speeches?
No. I think at any level contest, it could go either way. You never know, I think. You never know what judges will want to see or hear or understand or digest on any given day at any level. And they might simply decide, you know, I just don't understand what you're trying to say. And you have to be cognizant of that. And to tell you the truth, Chris, I think you got to be grateful. I think you have to be grateful when a group of judges within a given room in a particular day say, yes, we want you to move forward and represent us. Your club is asking you to represent them, your area, your division, your district. And that's a responsibility. You know, that's an honor. It's an honor, and now you have a responsibility. You know, when the contest chair at the next level asks you those questions while you're waiting, right? Who do you represent? What district are you representing? That's a key word. It's not just, well, whose shirt are you wearing? You're representing. People have asked you to represent them. And that's incumbent upon us to take that flag and fly it, and then to give back. You then have to give back. You then have to go back to that club, your area, your district, and say, okay, thank you. Now, what can I do for you? Right? You've given me this badge, this crown, as it were, and now what can I do for you?
Well, and I know leading up to the world stage, you know, the obviously, you've practiced and practiced and gone in front of different audiences. In your experience, would you say that if you make any tweaks or changes to the speech, is it because of audience reactions or is it because of the feedback that you get when you're doing it at different clubs and whatnot, or is it a little bit of both?
But a little bit of both. My nature is that it's always evolving, always evolving. I used to tell kids with our theater productions, you have all the way up until opening night. And then even past opening night, I'm working on it. And we used to take a play and put it through contest. So you just like club, area, division, district, we would have levels of contest until you got to the state meet. We're working it. There might be 2 weeks between one level and the next level, and we're still rehearsing and working for every single moment. How do you take it to that next level? How do you galvanize that moment? How do you grow? And there are different ways of growing, right? It's not always serious. There's a lot of different ways of growing. You don't have to just grow up or grow out. You're also growing in. You're growing within yourself, and we're growing closer. You learn how to grow closer to your audience, just like a team will learn how to grow closer together. And these are the ways that we get better as speakers.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, as someone who has spoken in different parts of the world, what would you say you have found is the same among people that you've met in different countries?
You know, that's a fascinating question. And it's definitely not the same in terms of why people join Toastmasters. Because in other parts of the world, people join Toastmasters to practice their English. And that's not the case in America. But you know, they already know English. But in terms of why they might attend a workshop, I think they want to get better. It's that simple. We want to get better. We want to grow. For some people, it's growing at work. For other people, I think they're discovering there is something within them. And they want to fan that flame, right? The flame is there. They want to fan that flame. And there's a universality to that. And you want to honor that. You want to honor the fact that, hey, this is how you grow. This is how we get better. And you can do it. You can do this. You can stand on a bigger stage.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think a lot of it, to me, has to do with, like you said, connecting and also being on that stage and connecting to your audience. Because I'll tell you, I had So I'm not sure if you know this. One of the world champions, one of the recent ones, Jocelyn Tyson, was from District 38. And
Oh.
so, number one, people said that they connected to her story. But in our own district, people felt like, wow, like they connected with her as a person and felt like, wow, I can maybe do what she's doing because of that connection. Because we all, and I think we've been saying Toastmaster provides this. The commonality between us, and it makes us feel that, that thing that might have been unreachable is actually more attainable than we think. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And that, I'll tell you one place that people don't think about connecting in our vulnerability. We don't consider that we all have a lot of the same fears. We all and how those fears might lead to conflict. And how they're related to our goals. And that's why I say in storytelling, the most important things you got to look at are character. And the character in a story, who is you, oftentimes in a speech, the character and what's their conflict? What do they want and what's getting in the way? And when you put it in those terms, there's a real universality to that. All of a sudden, it's like, yeah, I have conflict too. Yes, I also want peace, love, happiness, and there's something getting in the way. And what is that, and how do we overcome it? And that becomes part of why we are the exact same thing. And when you can allow yourself to be vulnerable and open up, and I'm not saying we gotta bleed all over the stage. I'm saying even to share my doubts. I don't know if I'm good enough. Wow, you can hear a pin drop in the room.
Because we all feel it.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Not just to be a speaker, but to be a leader, but to be a father, but to be a mother, to be a sister. I don't know if I'm good enough. I don't know if I'm worthy. Right? All of those fears, universal, and one of the great things about being a speaker, which is also one of the keys to being a successful speaker, is can you go from me to we? Oftentimes when we're speaking, we know that script so well. I'm reading this script, I'm reading this story. This is my story, and I'm going to read it. And we don't realize, Chris, that you've got to go from me on this side of the story to meet we this side of the story. And understand that when you're telling your story, you're reading your fingerprints. But that's not what your audience sees. Your audience is looking at your fingernails, your knuckles. They're looking at the scars on the outside, right? And you have to see it from their point of view. So you see your mother, your father, your child in that particular way. But to the person who does not have a child, you've got to rephrase your conflict in a different way that they can still plug into. Maybe they don't have a kid, but maybe they've got a friend. Does it still apply? What are the conceptual notes that you're trying to share and find that connection with your audience? Then you realize, okay, I've reached a broader audience. And in part, when we were talking about the contest, that's part of what you have to do. You're not just saying the same speech to a larger group of people. You're trying to find some broader themes in your speech that apply to a broader group of people.
Absolutely. So, besides your own proud accomplishments, can you tell me some of your proudest accomplishments of any of your students that have stood out for you, and maybe what part did you play in getting them there?
As a theater teacher for that long, you've got kids who make it to New York, maybe not in a famous play, but they're making it to New York. They're up there in the Kennedy Center, they're or excuse me, in on a Broadway stage. Some are in LA, Chicago. But I'll tell you, Chris, some of the proudest moments I've ever had as an educator were really when they walk the stage at graduation. I mean, they made it and nobody thought they would. When one kid found me on Facebook, and this is a kid that I didn't think graduated high school, and all of a sudden, a few years later, he's telling me he's got his master's degree. Yeah, not only did he graduate high school and he ended up in college. Because that was my job. He was in my class because no one thought he was going to make it. He's like, Ferzy, your job is to get this kid. I'm like, are you kidding me? So he's in my speech class and I'm supposed to get him to graduate high school. And there he is with a master's degree. And he said, this is for you, Mr. G. And that'll take your breath away.
It does. Just hearing that kind of took my breath away, and it kind of reminded me of something. And I tell people, especially new Toastmasters, this, and what you just said exactly described it. You never know. You might never know who you inspire in this life. You might never find that out. It's cool when you, and it sounds like you got the opportunity to find that out, but because words have power. And that, again, being in Toastmasters, we get to share our words, our thoughts, our feelings, and whatnot with other people. And you don't know that they're not going home and being like, you know what? I'm going to make that decision. I'm going to do this thing because somebody in my club today overcame this, and I'm going to apply this to my own life. And the same thing with teaching is I was at one point a teacher in my life, and it, again, like you never know the difference you have on people. And so in a way, people who aren't even maybe teachers by profession, they're in Toastmasters, they are teaching people too.
Yes,
Wow.
absolutely. And
And
you make
that
an
takes us,
impact.
yes, impact. Absolutely. And so talking about teaching, from what I know with you being at the virtual conference that we're going to have here on November 15th, You're going to be teaching our members something. So any preview or tease of what you're going to be talking about at our District 38 Fall Virtual Conference?
Well, the title of the speech is going to be about 5G.
Okay.
5G. And I know we're going to start thinking about our phones, but it's going to be talking about how Toastmasters is our 5G network. And Toastmasters helps us at that personal level and on a global scale. And that's a beautiful thing. It is the most beautiful thing about Toastmasters, how we can really utilize it on a very personal level and on an incredibly universal level.
Well, I'm very much looking forward to it. And so thank you so much, Furzy, for taking the time to talk to me and providing some insight for our listeners. And on a personal note, when I saw you on the world stage in Anaheim, I had no idea that I would get to talk to you personally today. So I wholeheartedly appreciate this opportunity. Any parting words before we sign off?
It's never too early and it's never too late, Chris. Wherever you are in your journey, it's never too early and it's never too late. Go for it. Go
That
for
is
it.
very true. Thank you for that. And with that, I'm Chris Hulse. And if you have a story to share or you know someone who does, and you or them would like to be one of the future voices on this podcast, please send an email to podcast@tmdistrict38.org. That's podcast, podcast at tmdistrict38.org. And until next time, remember to project that voice you have fearlessly forward. Make sure you grab the megaphone.